Think of that 16th verse. It says, and when she came to her, or came to her mother-in-law, she just come back to Naomi, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done to her. Think of the question, "Who art thou, my daughter?" If my counter recollection is correct, this is part 24 of the series of studies in the book of Ruth, as we come near to the end of the third chapter of the book. I want to emphasize to you this morning that a good title for the book as a whole, not just the third chapter, but a good title for the book as a whole would be this, Three Funerals and a Wedding. That title sums up the story of this book, and it sums up the contents of this book very well indeed. If you cast your mind back to the beginning, to chapter 1, you will remember that Ruth stood at the graveside three times. But just take that in, not just once or twice, but Ruth stood at the graveside on three occasions. She buried her father-in-law, Elimelech, her brother-in-law, Kilian, and her husband, Mahlon. Mahlon was just a young man when he was taken from this scene of time. A reminder to us that it's not just the old that die. And that must have been very, very painful. One of those deaths in itself, but particularly thinking of the death of her husband. So Ruth had attended three family funerals. She had stood at three family graves. But now as we come to the end of chapter 3, she's about to stand at the altar. Remember that this was Ruth standing at the altar for the second time. She had been married before. We could describe Ruth as a young widow. She had lost her husband while she was still at a very young age. So this is a story of three funerals and a wedding. We have looked at the funerals. That was quite some time ago, way back near the beginning of these studies. And now I want us this morning to take a little look at the wedding, at the marriage of Boaz to Ruth. Let me stress to you in the meeting this morning, let me remind you all that marriage is a major life-changing step. The greatest decision that any person will make in this world, next to salvation, is the decision who you're going to spend the remainder of your life with. And when making that decision as a Christian, as a child of God, you need to be familiar with the teaching, the instruction, the clear instruction of the scriptures on that subject. And the book of Ruth has much to teach us about marriage. We have considered already some of the other subjects that would precede love at first sight, going on a date. And now we're going to think of what the book of Ruth has to teach us about the subject of marriage itself. There are just two questions we want to consider. There'll be a few other details, a few other points that we'll make under those. But just two questions in particular about marriage that I want you to consider with me in the meeting and in our Bible study today. Think first of all of the question, why marriage? Or why marry? That is a good question. In fact, it's a vital question. Why do people marry? You think of a young couple engaged, planning their marriage and wedding together. If you ask them the question, why are you getting married? You might, depending on the couple that you are speaking to, be given various answers. You just think of that yourself. This morning, what would you say Why did you want to get married those many years ago? The sad thing, you know, that for many, the answer that is given, even for many Christians, the answer that is given is the wrong answer. It's the wrong reason. It's the wrong foundation upon which to build your marriage and your home and your future life together. Let me give you some examples. Some people marry so as to leave home. That might have been the case more so in former years. Don't get on with their parents. They hate living at home. They hate home life. They despise the rules, the restrictions that parents place upon them. And they say, we'll get married. We'll have a home of our own. We'll do what we want. It's, they think, just like a release. In a sense, it's like jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. Can I emphasize, particularly to the young people in the meeting, remember, you're a lot better off at home with your parents than maybe you realize. Sometimes it's only after you marry that you realize how good things were at home. Another reason that people give for marrying is lucre or money. They say that I don't care what he or she looks like so long as there's money, plenty of money. I know a girl many years ago married a wealthy farmer. She said publicly and repeatedly, I was led to believe I was marrying a millionaire. That was what was in her mind. That was her clear reason for entering into that relationship. And that marriage many years ago is broken up. Some marry just for money. You think of Nabal, 1 Samuel 25, a very wealthy man, but he was a churlish man. In other words, he was rude. He was a man that was very bad-tempered. Wasn't a very nice relationship. In fact, the relationship with Nabal and Abigail gives a very clear example of sometimes a husband or wife that's found in a very difficult marriage, found in a very difficult relationship. You know, it's interesting. The name Abigail means father's joy. She must have been her father's joy, but remember that in those days, the father and the mother had a big influence and a big input into who they actually married. And the father mustn't have thought too much of his daughter to give his approval, to put his stamp of approval upon her entering into a marriage relationship with such a man as Nabal. It would seem he had his eye more on the money than he had in the care and the future of his daughter. Let me read to you these words. Maybe you'd like to look them up yourself and read the verse with me. It's found in the book of Proverbs, and it's the chapter 21, and it's the words of the verse 9. It says, it is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman. And if you have a Bible with a margin, it says, in that place, a woman of contentions, with a brawling woman in a wide house. And if you look at the marginal reading there for wide house, it talks about a house of a society. Isn't the warning clear? You can live in a society house, one of the grandest homes in the city, one of the loveliest dwellings in the community, maybe even in the country, but with a brawling or a contentious wife, there's no substitute. Or living in such a home doesn't make up for such a relationship. The scriptures are clear. Better, it says, to dwell in the corner of a housetop, the smallest dwelling in the country, if you have a peace and a happy relationship together. So remember, marrying for money, no matter how much money, won't make you happy. It's the clear warning of the scriptures. Another reason people give is looks. I married for looks. The fairy tales give the idea and it only is a fairy tale. They give the idea all you have to do is marry somebody that's good looking, handsome, beautiful, and you will live happily ever after. If that is true, men and women, then think of this question. Why do all the Hollywood actors and actresses marry so many times? All that are so handsome and so good looking. If it just as looks, if that's all that matters in a relationship, why do their marriages break up so quickly? Why do they marry so often? Elizabeth Taylor, remember, a very attractive lady in her youth. But remember, she married eight times. Of course, it is nice to marry a person with attractive looks. But it's far more important to have an attractive character, an attractive personality. More important to have a clear, conscientious walk with God. Do you know a survey found that among those with a bad figure or a figure that's not so good, there was a very high percentage of marriages that lasted the course of the lifetime of the couple. And one conclusion they drew from that is that you will tire of a person's looks, you will tire of their body before you will tire of their personality. So some would say, I married for looks. Some marry for lust. What many think is love, let me emphasize that. What many think, and they only think it, is love, is not love at all, it's only lust. Nothing more than physical or sexual desire. We all know that that happens. We all know that it's true. A lot of the time that people go out, or the reason that a lot of people go out and get married, is nothing more than the lust of the flesh. And there's another one I'll mention to you, and that is love. Can I say to you, men and women, love can be, you be in no doubt of that this morning, love can be the wrong reason to marry someone. You may be surprised at that. Sometimes people, when they're asked why, you get, well, I love him or I love her, as if that is the answer to everything, if that makes it right. Remember, the Bible teaches clearly you can love the wrong thing. Love not the world. So even as a Christian, you can love the wrong thing. You can set your affections on things that are not pleasing to God. And even to take that a step further, not only can you love the wrong thing, the Bible is very clear, you can love the wrong person. Can I ask you to ponder that for a moment? You can love, set your affections, set your heart upon the wrong person, not the person that God ever intended you to marry. You only have to think of Solomon. What does the Bible say about the wisest man that ever lived? He loved many strange women. So never forget that, men and women. And remember, if I could give you a very clear and practical example of that, if you're going out with an unsaved person, young person, whether you're a boy or a girl, if you're going out with an unsaved person and you're trying to justify that relationship to your parents, or try to justify it to the church, to the leaders of the church, by saying, I love him or I love her, that doesn't make it right. Remember that? The clear commandment of, or the command of the Word of God is, you're not to be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. So love can be the wrong reason to get married. If in marrying that person you're doing something that is clearly contrary to the teaching of the Word of God. You think of the promiscuous society in which we live, this day of equality, so-called, when they're crying for same-sex marriages to be legalized in this province of ours, and you hear them say, well, I love him, two men, I love him, he loves me. That doesn't make it right. And they want by saying that to give the impression that it does make it right. You can love the wrong person. So let me stress that very clearly to everyone in the meeting this morning. We're thinking of Martin Luther this year, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Luther and his Katie, Catherine von Bora, who was a former nun. Whenever Martin Luther got married, this is what he said: "I'm not in love." Katie said that she didn't feel in love, but their love developed, their love grew, their love blossomed through the 20 years of married life that they spent together. Marriage needs love. Let me stress that, being no doubt. The Bible exhorts that. We read it in Ephesians 5 this morning. Husbands, love your wives. And what a standard is set, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. Marriages need love, but it can, men and women, be the wrong reason for getting married. So let me stress to you then, these are not the right reasons. I've given you five. They're not the right reasons for marrying. They're all wrong. Parents sometimes push their children into marriages, or sometimes parents stop their young people from going out with someone. They say, "He's so good looking, you should marry him." Or, "He doesn't have enough money. He doesn't have a good enough position, good enough standing in our community." Can I say to you, parents, it's wrong to emphasize to your children those sort of things. Some here, you know that to be right by experience. Maybe you did it with your own child, and now you regret it. Now you regret it because of circumstances that have developed. You say to me this morning, there's not much left. If all of these are the wrong reasons, then what is the right reason for marriage? Well, you look at verse 1 of the chapter. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter," and notice these words very carefully, "shall I not seek rest for thee?" She didn't say, "Shall I not seek out some good-looking young fella, some knight in shining armor? Shall I not look out for you, the richest man in the community?" And in the providence of God, the man that she did marry was the richest man in the community. But those were not the things that were in Naomi's mind, none of them. "Shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" And I want to say, brethren and sisters, young people especially, never forget those words of Naomi's that are found there in the first verse of Ruth chapter 3. The real reason for marriage is to find rest, to find peace. Marriage should be a blissful relationship. It should bring peaceful life. It should bring to you and to your home a peaceful state. You know too well often that is not the case. Often the reality is far from that. You know it is often repeated things such as a man said, "My wife and I were happy for 20 years and then we met. And they had an unhappy relationship ever after. No rest, no peace." That is very, very common. More common, men and women, than sometimes we care to acknowledge and care to recognize. Why is that? Well, it's simple. They married for the wrong reason. They built upon the wrong foundation. They didn't think about those things when they were engaging in that relationship or setting out on that relationship together. You talk about a stormy relationship. Sometimes marriages can be described like that. Well, if it was stormy before you married, it'll be a gale, an absolute tornado, hurricane afterwards. So I come back again to the question, men and women. Why should I marry? I want you to think of that. because you want a life of rest, a life of peace. Do you see the words at the end? That it may be well with you. And if you know, and I say especially to the young people, if you know that you'll not find it with the person you're dating, that rest, that peace, no matter what else they can give you, if you know you'll not find it, then the lesson is, don't marry them. They're not right for you. Don't do it, regardless of what else they can give and bestow upon your future life. So that's a little of the question, why marry? Think of the other question, and that is, who should you marry? Well, let me emphasize to you a number of truths in the passage in answering that question for you this morning. Think first of all of the couple. This is a story. Think of the three funerals and a wedding. We're considering the wedding especially. Well, this is a story of a man marrying a woman. That seems obvious enough. Remember, she was a younger woman. You find that in chapter 4, in verse 12. Look at the words at the end of that verse. It tells us the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. So Ruth was still a very young woman, even at the time when she married for the second time, on the second occasion. And Boaz was an older, or maybe even we'd have to describe him as an old man. Look at verse 10 of chapter 3. Inasmuch, the end of the verse, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. So the clear inference is there that he wasn't young. He was an old or an older man. Can I say to you, men and women, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with a young woman marrying an older man. Some people gossip about things like that. But then some people just like to gossip about everything. You have a clear example of it here. And a clear biblical example of that. John Knox, the great Scottish reformer, as we think of the Reformation, when he married the second time, he was at least 30 years. Sometimes in the accounts, as you read it, the age is very little, but at least there was 30 years between John Knox. She was in her late teens. He was in his early 50s when he married for the second time. So it was a man marrying a woman. That seems basic enough. But remember, men and women, in the day in which we live, that needs to be stressed and emphasized more than ever. Remember that the Lord himself conducted the first wedding that ever took place. God teaches by example as well as by command. He conducted the first wedding in the lovely environment of the Garden of Eden, when Adam married Eve, a man married a woman. God set that example. You've heard it. Let me reiterate it. I think it was Ken Ham of Answers in Genesis that first coined it, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. The civil partnerships, so-called same-sex marriages, they're sad, they're vile, they're wicked. The New Testament talks about vile affection, those who are abusers of themselves with mankind. It talks about unnatural desires and unnatural affection. And that's what all of those things are, men and women. So I want you to think about the couple here. A man marrying a woman. A clear biblical example of what marriage actually is. Keep in mind that sodomy, in the days of Lot, brought down the judgment of God upon the land. And it'll do the same here, men and women. It'll do the same here in this land of ours. So as well as the couple, think of the council. Think of council as an advice. In the Jewish custom, parents and relatives, they were the ones that proposed the wedding. It's not different from how things are done in our land today. And that's why Naomi here played such a major part in all that was taking place. You know, We might laugh and we might criticize what we describe as arranged marriages and so on. But let me ask you, are the marriages better today than they were in Old Testament times, whenever the parents had such an influence, such a guiding hand in the relationships and the marriages and so on? Are the marriages better today than they were then? The answer, of course, is no, they're not. And we can learn, men and women, much from that. One of the lessons, of course, is whenever you're dating, young person, whenever you're thinking of marriage, listen to the advice of others, your parents, your family members, the leaders of the church. Do you remember what the book of Proverbs says? A wise son heareth his father's instruction. If you're wise, you'll listen to the advice and guidance your dad gives to you. The Bible says as well, the same book of Proverbs, forsake not the law of thy mother. So whenever you're thinking about getting married, when you're thinking of a relationship, it's good to ask your folks, good to get a wee bit of counsel and guidance from them. Whenever you're thinking of Naomi, you look at the question there that she asks in verse 16 in our text, the question, who art thou, my daughter? That's the second time Ruth was asked that question in the one evening. Boaz asked her the question at midnight. Remember, he was startled, and he awakened to find a woman at his feet. He was there in the threshing floor. And then Naomi asked Ruth the same question early in the morning, just as she arrives home. Now, you think of that. Who art thou? Her mother-in-law asked that question of her daughter-in-law. You might be asking yourself, was Naomi becoming a wee bit forgetful? Was she starting to dote? Did she not recognize Ruth? Was it too early in the morning? Had she been drinking? Why did she say, who art thou? Was it still too dark for her to recognize the young woman so early in the morning? Well, let me say to you, the answer to all of those questions is no. You see, the question would be better put like this, not who art thou, but whose art thou? Naomi, like most women, was excited about the prospect of a wedding. She was excited about a wee bit of romance in the family. The prospect of a wedding taking place in the family in the not too distant future. And really what she was asking Ruth was, is the marriage going ahead? That's what she wanted to know. Whose art thou? Are you going to be Mrs. Boaz? Or is the romance over? No prospect, no future in it. There's a third thing I'll ask you to consider, and that is care. You look at the end of verse 13 of the chapter. It tells us, but if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. Lie down until the morning. Isn't that interesting? He asked Ruth to stay all night. And I'd like you to consider that. Why did he not tell her to go home? Or why did she not go home at midnight? Remember, that's when he awoke. That's when they had the discussion. That's when she spoke to Boaz. That's when she made known to him what was on her mind and on her heart. That's when the business was done and transacted and the business was over. So why did she not go home at midnight? Why did she stay all night until the morning? He said to her, lie down until the morning. Isn't that an interesting thing? It's a good question. Remember, I'd like you to do a wee bit of study of your own on these things and encourage you to read what Matthew Henry has to say on that portion. Take time, maybe this afternoon. Every Christian home should have a full set, not the abridged, the unabridged, a full set of Matthew Henry's commentaries. Especially on practical things, it is unsurpassed. The reason that Boaz told her to stay all night until the morning was because of his concern, his care. He was concerned for Ruth. Remember the time, midnight, the middle of the night, the darkest time. He was afraid of the path. Maybe she might fall in the darkness. He was afraid because of people, evil people. She might fall among thieves making her way home. He was afraid because of prowlers. Remember, some wild animal, some wild beast might catch her and attack her. So in what he said and what he did, it showed Boaz cared. He cared for Ruth. And also, the end of verse 17, he said to her, "Go not home empty." That's interesting. Remember, it's good not to rush over verses of Scripture, to ponder them carefully. Go not home empty. Remember what Naomi said when she first came back to Bethlehem after being in Moab for those 10 years? "The Lord hath brought me home again empty." She had stated that publicly. And it was well known in Bethlehem. Boaz had heard it. But the reality is, their days of emptiness were now over, because God had blessed them and made provision for the future of the family. So in the care that he gave, and he gave her a full measure of meal to take home with her that evening, Boaz was a caring man. And remember, men and women, that's the sort of person, when we're thinking of this question, who should you marry? That should be well up your list. Well up your list of priorities. Do you remember that Eve was made from Adam's rib? I bring you back again to Matthew Henry. One of the most famous statements on that portion is Matthew Henry's statement. You find it and read it. I'll give you a little of it this morning, not at all. Matthew Henry said that Eve was made not from Adam's foot, as if she was to be trampled upon, but under his arm, so that he could protect her. And that's what marriage is all about. Caring, a concern, the protection, particularly of the husband of his wife. There's one other thing as we think of who to marry, and that is the character. And remember, that is vital, the character of the person. And you find it there at the end of verse 11 of the chapter, those two words. It says that all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. The word virtuous can mean strength of body, strength of finances, strength of character, taking all of those things. Remember, Ruth had no money, and she wasn't very strong physically. So what we've been taught there, what has been stressed, is that she had a young woman who had strength of character. It wasn't just a pretty face, but she had a beautiful character as well. You know, we're all familiar with George Best, the famous footballer. Angie Best, George's wife, she knew that he was a drinker. She knew the problem. She knew the character, clearly the character of the man that she was involved with and the man that she married. But you know what she said? She said, "I thought I could change him." And many think they can. Many think they can. Maybe you thought that as well. Who should you marry? A person like Ruth in this book, who stands out for their character, their virtue, their moral character. So that's a little about marriage, men and women. Why should I marry? And who should I marry? I'll finish just with this. Mr. Spurgeon, he said on one occasion, speaking on the subject of marriage, "If I wasn't married and I found the right person, I would marry in the morning." And he quoted the verse in support of that, "Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor of the Lord." Well, Boaz, as the book shows and will show particularly in chapter 4. Boaz certainly found a good thing in Ruth. And for Ruth, it was also true in the husband that she found. And young people, remember these questions. Remember these truths. Remember the lessons of this book, the lessons of the relationship of this couple, when you're thinking of marriage. And if you do, that will help you to find a good thing as well, as far as marriage and home and future life is concerned. We're going to sing a verse or two of a wedding hymn as well.